Now, it's been a relief to hear this week that in many places around the country, catastrophic bushfires are now mostly under control and the worst conditions have hopefully eased off. And while the damage to the bushland is extensive, we're about to learn that maybe not all doom and gloom. Associate Professor in the School of Biological Sciences at the University of Queensland, Dr. Rod Fensham is on the line to tell us about how the bush can recover. Good afternoon, Rod.
Good afternoon. Yeah, well, it's always a shock to see areas of forest blackened and charred by the result of fires, sometimes from the ground right to the tops of the trees. But the eucalypt forest, which is the subject of most of these fires, is remarkably resilient and does have some magic powers of regeneration, including what we call epicormic buds, which are those buds which shoot out green growth from the trunks. And people will be familiar with a sort of post-fire landscape a few months after a fire, and the trees look like they're sort of covered in fur.
Yeah, that's a really amazing thing. It's like, I think everyone's waiting for that moment when we can start having some hope that these places will grow back. And they will grow back, right?
Yeah, it's like phoenix from the ashes. I mean, there's some vegetation types that won't recover at all, such as rainforest. So, and that's the unusual thing about this fire season, is that we've lost some areas that will really struggle to recover. But the big matrix of eucalypt forest, which extends up the east coast of Australia, is fairly well adapted to fire. It's just what we're not used to, seeing such large areas burn in one year.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, you've probably seen a lot of, you work with forestry and trees in Australia, southeast Australia, northeast Australia. How is this season compared to what you've seen in the past?
Well, it was on the back of an extraordinary drought, so the forest was sort of primed to burn in that way.
Yeah.
But I suppose what's unusual is that we've had really intense periods of hot, dry winds coming out of the interior of the continent, extending from early September, which is very early, right through to the present. And in your introduction, you said we're going to get some relief, but we're right in the height of the fire season right now. So very often, you know, we have catastrophic fires extending into February and even March. So
well, it's
true. A fair way to go.
I mean, I was only looking optimistically the next few days. We're looking like getting a lot of rain around the east coast. But of course, yes, we are. Aren't even halfway through, or just halfway through summer now.
That's right. Yeah, and that fire season sort of, as it progresses from September through to March, through the summer months, it moves to the south of the continent. You know, the dangerous areas sort of become the southern part of the continent. We get worried about fire here where I am in Brisbane between September and November, but the problems in South Australia and Melbourne and Tasmania, the difficult times sort of more like November to March.
I read an article which you were involved in, which basically said what you're saying, that rainforests and sort of sub-rainforest areas, usually the fire will just stop because there's no sort of fuel on the bottom or the lower areas, all of it's up in the canopies. But we saw some sort of rainforest areas get burnt early in the season. What actually caused that? Why did they start burning?
Well, we got reports of rainforest burning after a particularly intense period in early September here, where I can't remember weather like that before. You know, it's just really extended periods of hot, extremely gusty wind, just totally low humidity. And it was on the back of a very dry winter here, up here in the subtropics. And so we went out to see the effects of those fires, and I thought the worst. I thought, you know, there'd be really extensive areas of rainforest burnt, because the rainforest wasn't wet like the name evokes. It was as dry as a crisp. And the weather really was intense. But I was heartened to find out that this rainforest has really magical powers of putting fires out. And I think that's one of the lessons that we'll take from this, is that certain vegetation types and vegetation structures are really extremely fire retardant. Maybe we can sort of start to artificially grow forests like that to help protect us from fire. So that was one thing I took away from those visits, was just how the fire sort of hits the fire boundary, the structure of the forest breaks up the fire weather, you know, these intense winds, and it turns into a trickle through the rainforest litter and then about 30 metres in from the boundaries, invariably the fire went out, which was, yeah, amazing to see. But some areas of rainforest burnt, and one of those areas that burnt is very dear to my heart because I've done some work up there. It's called 40 Mile Scrub. It's in one of our Queensland National Parks, actually in North Queensland. So we're not getting too many reports of environmental destruction that far north. But this is a very clear example of a forest which burnt that cannot recover. And it'll be permanently damaged. And the reason that this rainforest at 40 Mile Scrub burnt was because it had been invaded by an exotic shrub, which will be familiar to many people, known as lantana. And the lantana sort of filled that gap between the ground and the canopy and sort of acted like a wick to make what's normally a very fire-retardant ecosystem flammable under extreme conditions. And so the scrub was lost. Wow. And it won't be able to regenerate because the burnt forest will be prime habitat for the regeneration of lantana, which will turn into an even thicker shrubland than it was before. Amongst this fragmented canopy, and the fire cycle will become ever more frequent, actually, in the future in that burnt forest.
Oh, wow, so the lantana will actually take over that area.
Yeah, we know that because it happened before. Yeah. There's a little bit of the scrub that happened that burnt in the late 1980s, and it's just a sea of horrible lantana. But this recent fire just incinerated a much greater area in the same way, and almost the total, about 99.5% of the scrub was burnt.
Wow.
Burnt to the ground.
That's really sad.
Really sad, yeah.
I guess in these other areas we're talking about a lot of eucalyptus forests, which have went up, and it seems like they're very prone to fires, eucalypts. But are there other species of plants in those areas that maybe similar to those rainforests we've lost because they won't be able to regenerate?
We have an imperfect understanding of that and a good opportunity to learn more about it. I think it's fair to say that there's a whole multitude of strategies that plants of the eucalypt forest withstand fire. Some of them just get killed outright and have to regenerate from seed. Mm. Others have these underground organs that allow them to regenerate. And like I said before, the eucalypts have their thick bark and these buds that can regenerate. I think we shouldn't sort of overstate the resilience of the forest, and maybe the fauna is going to suffer the most, because what does happen in fires is that those big old trees that have hollows in them, they turn into big chimney-like furnaces and burn to the ground. And so you lose an awful lot of sort of habitat in these big fires. And maybe you can afford to do that, and maybe that's natural when it happens in a patchy way across the landscape little bits of the forest getting burned every year. But to see such vast areas of forest burnt in one go is a bit, it's serious consequences.
Well, it is. And of course, we've got people going around these areas, these burnt areas, looking for animals that are alive and trying to nurse them back to health and take them, I guess, to areas where they can survive.
That's right, yeah.
It's particularly, of course, koalas, but so many other species that would have been using those trees as shelter or the undergrowth or anything like that. That's something that we're not even going to, haven't quite fathomed how big that is yet, I think.
That's right, yeah, for sure. And, you know, like when you get like 500,000 hectares burned in one go, like we did at the back of Sydney, where are the refuges for the fauna to sort of recolonise from?
Yeah. It is it's hard to find positives, but we are trying to find something that we can look forward to and say, okay, yes, we've had these terrible fires, but things will regenerate, things will get back to normal. How long is this all going to take, do you think?
Well, those big old habitat trees will take a long time to come back, you know, 58 to 100 years.
Yeah, wow.
With regard to the positives, there is a component of our flora which is really fire dependent, and in some places it's not getting burnt sufficiently frequently to maintain its life cycle. So there'll be some pleasant surprises. You know, some of these things with seed banks that lie dormant in the soil and in areas that haven't been burnt for a long time, they're just not evident. They will miraculously appear, and that'll that'd be one source of hope.
Well, we'll take what we can get, I reckon. But he is hoping that we start to see, things that we can start looking at going, it's coming back, and maybe it will take a long time, but we'll get that fauna back as well.
In a few months after some rain, you'll see those beautiful sort of round orchids coming out of the ashes, which will be a source of hope and renewal.
He is hoping. Well, thank you so much for joining us on 2SER. It's hard to find the positives, but we're sort of trying to look forward to seeing how things will change or how things will regenerate. Of course, not everything will, as you've mentioned, but appreciate your time and your expertise in this matter.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.